Hello, I'm great.
Great.
Well, must say something. I'm fine.
What happened to great? Great is good. Great is
Great
good.
is good. Yes, great is good. Yeah. No,
What
I'm
a
happy.
nice way to start the week.
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy. Yeah, I'm happy and soft and, nothing really special, but cool.
Okay.
How about
No,
you?
I am great. It's Monday and I feel good. I feel good right now and I feel good about our topic.
Yeah. This is something we really like to talk about, don't we?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, so what I wanted to share before we start is maybe also our email address. It's sensate570 at gmail.com. So if there's any parents out there who have questions about, well, our topic today, raising our children consciously or conscious parenting, then please send us an email.
That would be great. Thank you for mentioning that.
What's
So I was thinking about the stages of development that we had described in the last episode. We started off with the schizoid, and that's in the womb and shortly after birth. And the next characterology or defense pattern is the oral. So, do you want to describe the oral?
Yeah, maybe just go a bit, before that we develop these defense patterns while growing up. So if our parents are really, connected and loving and giving us the freedom to move and everything, so we can develop into a loving and kind and free human being, then there's nothing, we don't need these defense patterns. But usually something goes wrong or we have to deal with traumas in our lives. And these traumas help us grow. So we need them also. But for parents to know what's causing traumas and what helps children to, to become strong and independent and connected.
Okay, that makes sense. Actually, it's the basis of a lot of theories. Freud, Jung, characterology, Lowen. Yeah, so that makes perfect sense to me, and it's what I see in my practice a lot.
Yeah, what do you see?
I see a lot of early childhood trauma. I see a lot of wounding based on whatever their experiences were when they were children. And the skills or lack of skills that parents have. And it's not the parents' fault. A lot of times they're just reproducing things that they experienced and that their parents experienced and so on and so forth. So yeah, it's important for us to look at these traumas so that we can work through them, help them to resolve them in a healthier way than they had in the past. How about you? What do you see in your practice?
Let me see. Well, I often work on very spiritual levels. So what I see a lot is people who are not very well at grounding their energy, come into their bodies. But then also, of course, struggling in relationships, how we bond with one another or how we keep our freedom. You know, that's a very essential part of being human. How do we connect and at the same time stay free? Or, you know, and what we do in relationships is that we try to fill each other's holes, in a sense. Mm-hmm. So how do we become our own energy field? How do we keep being filled with our own energies and not trying to, you know, please others? And that's often something that we've learned to do, how to please our parents. And then we repeat that also in relationships. We please our husbands or spouses. And yeah. So that's what I see a lot, especially women who do not take very good care of themselves, but instead are taking care of others. Mm-hmm. And it's also a defense mechanism to not feel into your own, you know, lack or your own loneliness, depletion. And that's all, you know, also connected to the oral wounding of not being met in your needs. Yeah.
So not being met in your needs.
Yeah. So that starts at a very early age in, you know, when we are babies, when we need our parents to take care of us, to be fed and to be held, to provide the safety and take care of our basic needs of food and shelter and warmth. And if parents are not able to do that, or, you know, something happens during childhood, then we start to develop this mechanism of not being in contact anymore with our needs, because it can be too painful. Can be so painful to feel the, you know, the loneliness and the need to be held while there is no one to hold you. So instead of, well, we just disconnect ourselves from that need or from, and from the feeling, from the pain.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when we disconnect from that feeling or the pain, what do you find happens with that, you know, tiny baby who, for example, who's crying because he or she is hungry or thirsty or wants some warmth or comfort, mm-hmm. and it doesn't come right away? What does the baby then do?
At a certain point, it stops crying. It stops asking for what it needs. So the crying is often just for parents, it's only a way of understanding that the child needs something. Mm-hmm. So when it stops crying, then and stops, it silences itself and its needs. So, but I'm not sure whether you mean that or something else.
Yeah, that's part of it. And I guess the other part of it is the baby creates a thought or belief that they're not going to be taken care of by their caregiver in mm-hmm. some way. And then they decide in that moment to do it themselves.
Hmm.
No one will help me. No one will support me. I have to take care of myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's one thing to add. It's not a very mental, you know, like a mental decision. It's very physical. Mm-hmm. It's in the, you know, in the structure, because we are growing and we don't have this mental ability yet when we are babies. You know, the mind starts developing when we are three or something, not, you know, not before. So we do not have a lot of ways to express our needs when we are so small.
Right. So the child can't actually say, hey, mom, dad, feed me, other than crying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when they don't get that, that bottle or the breast, they often find something to put in their mouth, like a thumb or a finger, to soothe themselves. And somehow that soothes them, that calms them down, they stop crying. And the pre-verbal belief is, oh, no one will do it.
Yeah.
I don't have needs.
Yeah, so it's pre-verbal. That's what I meant. Yeah.
So yes, I see this a lot. And we call this orality, the oral defense. A lot of my clients, a lot of students don't know what they want. Because they were never able to express it at a young age. They have a big abandonment issue, fear of being abandoned, fear that no one will be there. And a lot of times the thought or belief is, if I have a need, then I will be abandoned.
Yeah. Yeah, and it plays out also the other way around. You know, it can work both ways, that you can become very disconnected from your needs and always take care of yourself, become very good at taking care of yourself, or can also be that you are one of those people who needs a lot of, you know, attention from other people. Very needy. So these are people also who are often rejected by their environment because they are so needy. So this is very sad. You know, you feel the depletion, you need someone else to take care of you. And then because you are so needy, you are rejected by your environment and you get rewounded. And that's very sad. But it's also very sad to always have to do it on your own, which is something I know very well.
Oh, I know that one too.
There's this belief, I don't need anybody.
Been there.
Yeah.
Amen. I can do it myself.
Yeah, I can do it myself. Yeah. And the thing is that we all need each other. You know, we are, in a way, we need each other, and we are not codependent, but interdependent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the neediness, I know how I notice it in adults or children or teenagers. How do you notice it? What do you see happens with people who have that as a major characterology?
I see often that they talk a lot. It's a lot of talking without even connecting. So, you know, people want to be heard and you are there, but they are just telling stories without being in contact with their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this can take a long, long time. So you don't know... You don't know where to interrupt or, you know, to get them back into contact with you. Or so that's one way of, yeah. It's also people sometimes where they want to reject you before they can be rejected. So
say more about that.
Yeah. So people pushing you away when you come very close. As soon as you become too intimate and too close and too, you know, connected, then they really start to reject you because they feel how their needs are met. And at the same time, they are so scared of being, you know, rejected afterwards that they start to push you away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen that. I've been in relationship with people who have that as a major defense.
Yeah.
As soon as you start to open up, it's like, okay, I'm done with you.
Yeah.
Bye.
And it's so counterproductive because that's exactly what you need and what you're longing for and what you're wishing for. And now you start rejecting those people.
Right.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times the person with this major characterology also has to be the center of attention.
Yeah.
Okay. They're the ones who stand up and have to, if someone else is getting attention, no, look at me, I'm here, look at me.
Yeah.
And that's when they get rejected a lot.
Yeah.
By the group or the others.
Yeah.
Because it can be quite draining on your system.
Mm. Yeah. So when we go to, raising kids, so they do not develop this oral defense structure, because that's what we want as parents. And of course, we never will be able to, protect them from all harm and trauma and defense, because we all need that also to grow. But, what do we do to protect our children from that?
Well, here's the thing about orality that I'm aware of. That a lot of times the baby will cry and the parent may be in the restroom. So they get there, 30 seconds. They take 30 seconds longer than the demand of the child. Okay. And already that child is starting to say, oh, no one will be there for me. So it's a difficult thing to really work with or say, oh, I'm not going to let my child be oral. Okay. So even as therapists or healers who understand this process, maybe 30 seconds, maybe saying no, maybe not giving them the jacket or the blanket that they need in the moment, that child is already starting to develop that defense. However, to be cognizant of what's going on is, I guess, what we're really talking about and wanting to support people with. So some of the old ways of working with babies or being with babies is to let them cry. Okay. Let the baby cry. Let them cry, because if we go pick them up, then that could spoil the child.
Yeah.
And so letting a baby cry will increase that neediness. What were you going to say?
That some people also told me that the baby is like manipulative or something like that, So they are crying because they are trying to manipulate you into doing something. But this right. kid is only like, a few months old.
Right.
It's not, it's not manipulation.
Exactly. Going back to what you said previously, is the kid can't formulate those ideas or express themselves in that way to say, oh, when I cry, my parents will come.
Yeah.
So I'm going to cry just to manipulate. No.
No.
We'll talk about the prefrontal lobe at some other point in the future, but they don't have that ability. Sorry, folks. Your kids are smart. They may be off the charts geniuses, however, they don't have that ability to manipulate.
No.
So also another thing. So I laugh at that when you say that triggers something in me. The baby may need to be changed. Okay. Their diaper may need to be changed. And imagine that you're driving in your car. The baby's in the back seat. You can't pull over because you're on the highway or something. A baby sitting in a white or a wet or dirty diaper, and the baby starts to cry and say, oh, okay, I just have to sit here. No one's going to take care of me. When in reality, the parent isn't capable of doing anything in that moment. The oral wounding is already starting to form. Okay. So all in all, I'm saying do your best to get to your baby while they're crying. Use soothing words if you can't get there to change the baby. Use soothing words, communicate, touch, okay, so they develop that tactile sense of being comforted in some way. Be present.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you, what would you say?
No, I would say that these are like minor things, you know, to be maybe sensitive about, but it's more like when people are putting their babies away. I know of a story, like one of my colleagues, he had a baby, and whenever she would cry, he would put her in the maxicosi. I'm not sure what the seat, the little seat,
okay. Uh-huh.
And put her in the toilet and shut the door in the dark. She was there in the dark crying, you know, and that felt so abusive to me. Like, these are the things that these kids are so sensitive, and we are really giving them a message. Mm-hmm. Whenever you cry, we lock you up.
Right.
And these are the real traumatic things that create this oral characterology. Whereas when we take our time to bond and to take care of its needs and everything, then, you know, it will develop into a, you know, a strong human being also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Wow, that sounds so painful.
Yeah.
To stick the baby in a toilet and in the dark.
Yeah, because it was hurting his ears. And of course, we can be sensitive, especially when we are very tired, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to find ways to deal with that.
Right.
And I know that for myself, being a young parent, it can be so exhausting. So there's no way you can always attend to your children's needs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my kid, she was always crying, always at night, like 7 times a night, she would wake up and cry. And after 1 or 2 years, I was just exhausted. There was nothing left of me. But still, I tried, you know, to hold her and be there with her. But I know also that as a young mother, you have a lot of difficulty to, you know, ask other people to take care of your child, to be able to take care of your own needs, your own need for sleep, or, you know, going out or connect to an adult or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I was, as you were talking, I was thinking back to my son, who is the oldest. He had major separation anxiety, and in the middle of the night, one of us had to get up, put him in the car seat, and drive him around Miami until he fell asleep.
Yeah.
Okay, he had a difficult time just going to bed for naps. He always had to be with one of us.
Yeah.
So taking him to his room, lying down next to him so that he would fall asleep, I became somewhat of a magician. Okay, his head would be on my shoulder. I'm under him, my arms around him, and I would have to contort myself to get my arm out. And this kid, oh my goodness, he was a light sleeper. And if the door squeaked just a little bit, he would wake up.
Yeah.
And we'd start the process all over again.
Yeah. My daughter is saying, no chance of getting away. You know, I was there all the time. And I've walked many, many miles. Yeah. Yeah, and I also think, and that's another maybe not our topic, but it also has to do a lot with these children. Well, these children of now, they are so conscious and they're so energy conscious that they can really feel your presence. And they really, you know, they have a lot of channels to feel, see, hear the energy. So they are very aware of what's going on in the energetic levels. So as soon as you're not present or not there or not connected, they feel it. And they start, you know, they want to have you there. They're really challenging. And they really need you to be there in your body, present with them. And if you're not, they just feel it. They'll notice.
Absolutely. Yeah. The frustration that you might have, even though you may not use harsh words, your energy may show that you're frustrated and they're picking up.
Yeah. So when I was pregnant, I wrote this book about energy conscious children. They were, you know, they were older. They were between 7 and 12, maybe, but they were picking up all these energetic cues. They were seeing auras and colors and angels and everything. So this really prepared me to be, you know, a mother of energy conscious child. what they perceive and how you can deal with that. And a lot has to do with that these kids are mirrors of your own inner landscape and your own energy field. They are really reacting to that and ask you to maybe change or transform your energy field or how you feel and how you express your energy. So that's something to be aware of too, you know, that these children are beings also trying to help you to become more of yourself, something like that. Yeah,
it's when you see your child acting in a certain way, and if you can relate to that being something that you had to deal with when you were a child, you can make a different choice to break that pattern or resolve it. So yeah, I hear that. And I'd love to talk about that more in detail, because I know we talk about indigo children, crystal babies, and so on and so forth, these high-level beings, spiritual beings who came here to have an experience.
Yeah.
Even part of our soul group to come in and support us.
And what I can see in my daughter, and that's one of the aspects of these kind of children, is that they know themselves so well in a way. They are not going to, you know, go with whatever you tell them to do. They might be very... not pleasing. They're not trying to please you in no way. You know, as soon as you touch their integrity or try to forcefully do something that they do not agree with, hell breaks loose. So that's another part that's different than before, where parents were also, you know, like 100 years ago, parents were told to break the will of their children. And that's really difficult with these children. They're not letting you. Not that I want to, but they become so really angry when you try to.
Absolutely. My father-in-law would call his daughter, who he had her when he was 50, I believe. And because she would cry, he would go to spank her. And he would say, oh, she's being willful. Mm. Being willful.
Yeah.
And her oldest brother had to intervene.
Yeah.
And say, what are you doing? That's yeah. a baby.
Yeah.
Being willful.
Yeah. Wow.
What type of thinking is that? And I'm not, you know, I'm not wanting to disparage him. That's what he was taught. And he was reproducing.
Yeah. Yeah. So as parents, we really need to find a balance, I think, to, you know, at one hand to take care and to bond and to be present. And on the other hand, to, you know, let our children be free to find their own autonomy or to move, to explore. And that might be difficult.
yeah, to explore. So it sounds like we're transitioning into the next characterology, which is what?
Like the masochist, are you referring to that one? yeah.
Yeah.
So do you want to introduce? Yeah, do you want to do the introduction?
Well, I love how you introduced yeah. the oral, and I'll yeah. pop in.
Yeah, so it's not, you know, what they say is that we have all characterologies. So masochist is not something I'm very familiar with. You know, that's one of my, I do not really find it in myself. All the other ones I do. All the other ones are very present, but this one I'm not so sure about. But like the masochist is like what I really feel with that one is like they are so they are very obedient. They learned how to be very obedient and they know how to carry the weight of everyone on their shoulders. And they will be very, you know, loyal. They will help you a lot. They will be very, you know, people also with a big heart. Yeah. At the same time, it's very difficult also to know, same thing maybe as the oral, what they want, how they're, you know, and that it has to do a lot with the third chakra, which is about autonomy and will and the possibility of moving yourself forward in the world and make yourself known. And they can become very frustrated if they are not noticed, or it feels for me very, they are very like hidden inside themselves. That's how I would describe it, maybe. But okay. This is not my main, you know, it has not been my main focus.
No. That's okay. Really. okay, so that's pretty good description. Absolutely. Everything that you said is true. The stage of development for, or the wounding, the arrest of development, I should say, is after the oral stage. Okay, so the child is somehow violated. Their boundaries are violated. Somehow the parent or a caregiver doesn't recognize that child as an individual. And it's an extension of them for the most part. So the child, how it happens is the child is force-fed. Okay, so even when they're not hungry, the parent says, yes, you are. Sit at the table. Sit there until you finish all of your food. No, 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 I'm not hungry. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You're hungry. You're going to eat all of your food. Okay, I'm hungry. I guess I'm hungry. And they'll sit there. And and do exactly what they're told. Okay, and they don't have any free thinking of their own. They're forced a lot of times in the past, I don't know how it is today, forced evacuation. So the parent wants to hurry and toilet train their baby. So they sit them on the potty or the toilet, even though the child doesn't need to go. And they'll sit them there, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And sometimes they even berate them, insult them for not using the bathroom. Okay, doing it in the parent's time or the caregiver's time. And the child doesn't have any sense of self, doesn't have any boundaries, free thought. Oh, I have to do this. I have to be good. I have to blah, blah, blah. Okay. And at other times, the child is violated at a young age. And, you know, this is a topic that is needed to be discussed, sexually violated. And sometimes this happens unconsciously, where the parent may be changing the child's diaper and wipe too hard. Okay. And the child starts to feel violated in some way, even though the parent didn't intentionally do that. It's a feeling of being violated in their private area. So as that child grows up, they don't have a sense of self. They have a difficult time making decisions. And what you'll see how that manifests in the child is that they may put on extra padding, extra weight. And as adults, you'll see they're usually either very muscular, and we call that armor. So they develop this armor because they had no boundaries. So they develop these external boundaries, physical boundaries through their muscles, their extra fat, so that they're protecting themselves from the outside world.
Yeah, and this also can be born from love, you know. It's like these overprotective mothers who really want to take good care of their children, who are not leaving their sight, you know, who really are walking like a few steps behind them to pick them up every time they fall, you know. So it can be very, I mean, the intention is to be loving. But as a child, you don't get the space to move and to develop your own, well, boundaries, know what you can and what you cannot do. So I remember this when you were talking. I remember this, you know, these children are so sensitive. So, you know, And traumas can be very subtle and they can be very gross. So I remember this story from one of my relatives, and she came here from Indonesia and her parents were still there. So she was raised the first years in an orphanage by the nuns. And she was raised by nuns. And she told me these horrible stories, you know, from where they had to eat. And when they were really full, they still had to eat and finish their plate. And then they would puke, or she would puke. And then they were told to even, you know, eat the puke. Or they were put in a bathtub with really hot water. You know, all these things they were doing to children, like, and I think she was about 3. And they are so sensitive, and it's so painful how this really hurts and damages the authentic people on the, you know, on the inside. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone actually did.
Yeah, that's what I really, what, you know, these are stories from the nuns. They are, and it's not a secret, you know, there are many stories about that. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's horrible. That's horrible. And I know those stories exist.
Yeah. So you can imagine that someone, after having gone through all these kind of experience while growing up, you become a little weird, or you know, different, or not connected to the world anymore. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of the other things I wanted to mention is, you know, you mentioned breaking of the will. And a lot of times what parents do is that they beat their children. I don't want to say spank because that's a controversial subject. But they beat their children, and beatings to break a child's will is going to create that masochistic or endure characterology or defense pattern. Would you like to say anything about that? The beatings or spankings? I don't know what it's like in the Netherlands or in Europe. How do you know, what is corporal punishment?
No, it's not accepted anymore. I think it's even, you can even be punished when you know, there's a law for that. You cannot do it. But of course, there are still children who are being beaten, but you will be punished for that. But of course, it's off. And now you see it with COVID. That's one of the main reasons that people really would like to, you know, come out of this lockdown, that a lot of children are locked up with their abusive parents. So that's one of the severe... I'm not sure what's happening to my English today. It's disappearing. effects of these kind of regulations that we're having right now is that a lot of children are suffering from domestic violence. So... yeah, so what was the question? What I see, so I do not see a lot of people beating their children, not at this time anymore. And I think I was beaten a few times, you know, that I think that was like okay then, but it was like, you know, maybe 5 times in my life, like a slap. It was more what my mother would do when I was really testing her, let's say, challenging her. She would wrap me and put my head under the cold shower. And that would feel very humiliating. So, but I do not think that people are very, you know, normally they do not beat their children, but I think they can be very strict. Where I look at my own style, I'm not so strict. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So my child, she is, I think, is really developing her own strength. So I do let her know what the boundaries are. She cannot be, you know, like very used wrong words or be, you know, be very aggressive or something like that. So I try to, you know, when she feels aggression, when she comes out of school, a lot of times when she has to deal with a lot of dynamics at school, I would ask her to, you know, to beat a pillow, for example. To just move the energy. So she doesn't have to hold it inside of her, but she's not reacting it outwards on me or friends, or, well, she would not do it on friends, but she would like to, but she's too scared to do it. That's what she says. So she's really, you know, she's really aware. I make her really aware of her own feelings and what she can or cannot do with them. and how she cannot hurt others, but how she can discharge the energy from it. So that's my way of doing it. But, you know, of course I'm struggling too as a parent.
Yeah. We all struggle from time to time as parents, you know, to do the right thing or handle things properly. So in my case, I'll just say, five times in your life.
Yeah.
Wow, you're so lucky. Oh my gosh. For me, beatings were common. Yeah. So I'm the oldest of five, and that was the way punishment was handled. And punishment, beatings, put in restriction, meaning you can't do anything, go outside, see friends, talk on the phone. Not like today where parents can take the cell phone away from the kids or the iPad or the computer. You know, sitting in your room by yourself for days on end. You know, I became very self-reliant, self-sufficient, and I read everything. Anything I can get my hands on, I would read. So, yeah, I kept myself busy. And I didn't actually know I had any masochism until later in life. Once I started doing the process work, I had no boundaries as a kid. Boundaries did not exist. I was, you know, an extension of specifically my mom. Okay. But, and also my dad. My dad would, any accomplishments that I had or my siblings had, he was, because of me, we did this. Like, no, I was the one who did this. So I would get into relationships where my boundaries were crossed all the time. They didn't exist. And through doing this work, understanding how masochistic defenses formed, I started looking at it. As I started looking at it, it started showing up on my physical form. Okay. So I was terribly skinny my entire life. They used to call me Slim when I competed in martial arts. I didn't even need to get on the scale because they knew that I wasn't overweight. And so after I returned from China in 97, I started Brennan the next year. 99, I think, is when I started going through the masochist change. And then when let's see, I got married in 2000. She got pregnant in 2001, and I kept putting on the weight and the boundaries, you know, the masochistic characterology showed up big time. So she put on weight, I put on weight. She put on weight, I put on weight.
Wow.
We merged.
Yeah.
So it was the enmeshment. No boundaries. She would finish my sentences, I would finish her sentences. And I just kept showing outwardly this masochistic defense. Didn't know what the heck was going on because I didn't change my eating, but it was showing up. So that I could heal.
Isn't it interesting how our bodies, so how our physical bodies reflect our energy? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm not about the body.
Yeah. It's so weird. Yeah. So by only looking at bodies, you know what kind of people are in there.
Yeah. Right. And that to me is the key. Look at the body, you're aware of your own body, you can pretty much tell where you are if you understand characterology. So let's go back to the oral characterology for a second. Let's describe the physical body. We already described the masochist. So what about the oral?
Yeah,
Body?
what I want to say about the schizoid, the one before, is also like the spine. That's where I can see it in my own body, that there can be distortions in the spine, where we really try to get out of the body to be in the more spiritual realms. So this is where I can really see it in my own body, these distortions in my spine. Yeah.
So what would that look
so
like? The
distortion. That there's like this, what's it called? Yeah, there's a curve there, but what's the normal word for it? No, not the twist, like the medical word. Yes, that.
Scoliosis? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I see. But the oral is more like you can see the neediness also in the body with the shoulders hanging forward. Like these are children that basically are raising their arms to be held. And you can also see it like the deflated chest, like it's inward. Yeah, sunken chest where it's inward. And there's overall not a lot of energy in the body. Yeah.
Right.
And so for the masochist, it's, yeah, there's a lot, there may be a lot of weight or like heaviness. Yeah.
Yeah. So the oral and the schizoid also have big wide eyes a lot of times. And the oral is enticing with their eyes. They can draw you in.
Oh, you're doing it.
And that's sort of how they would get energy from the other. So as the child goes off to school, all right, so you send these kids off to school, they have these defenses. You're a good mom. You have a healthy awareness. You're conscious. You send your child off to a new environment. And the teachers or the caregivers there are not. What happens to the child?
What happens? It gets really frustrated. If I look at my kid, she can be really frustrated and sometimes even really depressed about having to go to school and doing all these things that she feels are not for her. I mean, she knows that she needs to learn, you know, mathematics and spelling and everything, writing. She knows that. Mm-hmm. And she likes it because I saw that during the lockdown when she was at home that she really likes it. But at school, she needs to do it in a certain order and in a certain timing and in a strict, maybe kind of pattern or a structure that's not for her. So she really, it drains her energy basically, because when I see how much energy she has and that she's always moving and playing, it's a very playful child. But in school, she needs to, you know, keep her mouth shut. She cannot run through the hallways. She, you know, she needs to wait for the other children before she can start with the assignment, things like that. You know, it's not in her rhythm. And I think that's something, for her, it's difficult. For her, it's difficult. Yeah, that's what I can see. And at the same time, I really need to teach her that she needs to go there because that's our system. You know, we can be very mindful about the school we pick or we choose for them. At the same time, it's also the structure. And unless you want to, you know, do homeschooling. And before I didn't want to do that because, my God, that's a lot of work. But now we had to do it. And I actually really liked it because I saw how much my child profited from it because she had so much space to to stimulate her own, you know, needs and find whatever makes her happy or, you know, what inspires her. Yeah. Yeah.
That's really good that you were that aware of how your child takes in information and what she needs.
Yeah, and also I'm lucky because I'm co-parenting, so she's not here all the time and I have a lot of space for myself and for her. So I'm not there with, you know, five kids in a tiny house. And I know the difficulties, but for her it worked very well.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, five kids in a house, there's talk about boundaries, you know, you don't really have them. You have to find a little space to call your own.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very challenging. I can't imagine.
Yeah. And yet it's also very rewarding at the same time because your family. So, yes, going forward, kid goes to school or daycare or wherever they are. Now, not everybody has the luxury of sending their child to private school or it's a specific school. You go to the school that's in your district or your area. And that's if it's good, then great. If it's not, God help us. My kids went to Waldorf school. I think I mentioned that in another episode. They started in the Waldorf school or the Steiner school or
preschool.
What is it called again? Preschool. Yes. And then that's a method that was created to allow the kids to have that freedom to grow up as kids. You know, they hold them back so that they can really succeed or excel at learning later. They're taking things in, they're playing games, they're developing good values, good habits. So my son, let's go back to, he had terrible separation anxiety. Super smart kid. We took him when he was, I think, 3, just to see if he would like it. He went in, he likes learning new things. So he went in, he was fine. And the teacher said, hey, you know, you can leave him here. I think it was a camp for about a week just to see if the kids were ready. We got in the car, we lived about 45 minutes away. This is in Atlanta. If you know anything about Atlanta, for those people who are overseas and don't know anything about Atlanta, the traffic is horrible. Okay, so you may sit in traffic for hours and only move, kilometer or two. Okay. So we had to drive 45 minutes to get to this school. And he got car sick. He has that car sickness thing. And we drop him off for camp. We're on our way home. We receive a phone call from the school. Your son's crying. And he won't stop. We turn around and go back. We have to pick him up. It's okay. Maybe this isn't for him right now. No. Bring him back tomorrow. Did. Same thing. Same pattern. We got so used to him crying that we would just go to the cafe up the street. So we knew that this was going to happen. This separation anxiety coupled with the new environment, coupled with authority, quote unquote, having different ways of doing things, him having had the space that we provided him and the structure that they were giving him did not sit well with him. Did not sit well with him. He finished the week. We ended up saying, okay, maybe we'll go back in the fall, half a day for kindergarten. We did that. My daughter went with us on this trip. Now she's 16 months younger than him. We dropped him off. Things were fine that day when we dropped him off. Not fine with my daughter. No. I want to be with my brother. I want to be with my brother. So, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? No. I have to be with my brother. Somehow he sensed her. Or you get the phone call. Go pick him up. So energetically, they had become enmeshed too. They were so close. She loved him so much. She wanted to do everything. She would steal his toys, run away. He had no boundaries at home when it came to her. So these boundary things are not just from parents or caregivers. They also happen with siblings. So the sibling not recognizing that this is your other siblings, and they feel like, I can't have anything for myself. I can't have freedom to explore. So where I'm going with this is that in schools, this masochistic characterology can also be formed. And I think that's what you're kind of alluding to with your daughter.
She doesn't want to obey the rules. And I know why. I mean, I know why. Because at home we do not have those rules that she has to sit still, for example. She can move around.
We had those same rules, move around. The only thing they couldn't do is go into the kitchen because, if there's food cooking or you can be a little busy in the kitchen. Other than that, move around, play with whatever you want to play with, have your time. Going into that structured environment.
It's really difficult. So in the Netherlands, we have a lot of people who really would like to see the system be changed, that there's more space for children to explore for themselves who they are in. And we have a lot of freer systems where they try to support that. But these are also, under construction, like not formed yet in a way that you really, as a parent, you really trust the system to work.
So the Steiner School or the Free School or Waldorf is very structured compared to Montessori School. Montessori School is a little more free. They want to learn how to read, they can. They want to learn how to do. If they want to play with different things, objects, they can. So going from Waldorf, we sent our kids to Montessori, which was closer, so we didn't have to get on the road. My son was 5 at that time, and he thought he was going to learn how to read. He thought he was able to go in and out at, whenever he wanted, and he was happy about that. I was teaching in your class when I get a phone call. So I was in Europe, and I get a phone call saying Skylar had a breakdown. I said, what? What do you mean? He wasn't allowed to go out into the play yard. He was upset. So he took all of the toys and threw them on the ground, and then he sat on the floor screaming. So, okay. What do I do about it? What can I do about it? She said, I don't know. We have a meeting with his teacher to talk about what to do next. I was on this phone call. I'm supposed to be teaching you guys. I had to take 10 minutes. I remember it like it was yesterday. And the teacher's response was not loving, was not receiving, and was blaming. Well, did you tell him that he couldn't, that he could go outside anytime he wanted? Yes. And then when he wanted to go outside, he wasn't allowed. That's right. Did you explain to him why he wasn't allowed? No. Oh, what stopped you from doing that? Well, it was dangerous outside and he's just supposed to follow instructions. I said, how old is he again? And you guys are, the philosophy is openness and communication. So how did you get triggered? What was the trigger for you? Well, I'm responsible for him, and if he gets hurt, then you guys would be mad at me. I said, did you explain that to him? No. So a lot of listeners are probably like, what are you talking about? Explain that to the child. Well, if your child is conscious, then explaining it to them helps them. It's supportive. And if you're in your own space and your own trigger, your own wounding, then you're not seeing, you're not in relationship and you're not in communication. And that's not always easy. Don't get me wrong. I've made lots of mistakes. And I see now it's like those moments when I was present, things worked out beautifully. Those moments when I wasn't. We ended up taking him out of that school and sending him back to Baltimore. That was a lesson. It was a good lesson. You know, letting us know that everybody doesn't have our values. Or, not everybody works on themselves. Even if they're
teachers. Yeah, so also for teachers, it's, you know, there are a lot of good teachers and, you know, and hardworking teachers. But I think for my kid, if I see my kid, the only thing she needs basically is that you connect from the heart with her and that you see her, you know, that you see her as like a separate child. Not that she's the group and the group needs like discipline. she needs just to know that, she's being seen. And like, she's one of those kids, you know, that never says anything. She's, you know, keeping her mouth shut because that's what they say you need to do. And then all the other kids that are, you know, yelling and anything across the room, they get compliments whenever they are quiet. And then my kid says, I'm quiet all day. I never get a compliment. So I think children really needs to be, you know, seen, because she's really trying to be in this structure and be of service in a way to the structure. And she just needs to be seen for that.
Did you do anything like, what we used to do is positive, what was positive, or what was your high point in school? Or high point of the day?
I would say, well, how was your day? And she will say it's awful every day. So I try to, you know, expand her experience a little bit. So what's good about today, or, you know, what do you need? Or, I really try to explain a lot. So that, and now it's getting better. You know, it's also in, it goes in phases also, that sometimes they really need to make a jump in their, more in their mental abilities also, to be able to, you know, understand certain things. And when they're younger, they just do not understand structure and that they have to obey. And, you know, it's really difficult. Parents do, I think also what I see something like in public transport, for example, when children do not behave, children, the parents really treat them like they were adults or, you know, much older children. And they are like two or three and they do not really understand what the parent means. And still they are addressed in a, in such a, well, maybe grown up way. And you see the child, you know, that the eyes are blank. It's, there's no comprehension whatsoever of what they are told. So better try to be also, you know, flexible and try to find another way to make, you know, to bring your opinion or whatever you want from them across. Yeah. To be more creative with and you know, and to be empathic, really try to see where your child is and what it can comprehend and what not. And what are the ways that you can, you know, steer them through situations.
Right. How can you steer them through situations? Yeah, I like that. Language is important. It's truly important. So let's go back. I know we're kind of hopping around a little bit to what we were saying earlier about the oral baby or the oral defense. One of the things that I see and is very frustrating in mainstream psychotherapy and in parenting is the label of good baby versus bad baby. Because your baby sleeps through the night, then it's a good baby. Or your baby doesn't cry, it's a good baby. And I hear that, I heard it a few days ago. Oh, my daughter was a good baby. Yeah. She didn't cry a fuss at all. I thought, oh, that's so sad. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think, what I think is that, you know, the child is not here to play by your rules. It's here for its own development and its own lessons and its own just being. So there's no good and bad in that. There's just a child trying to get to know him or herself and life. And obviously it's pretty easy to see if the child is happy or unhappy. what you do about that is, well, it's different in different people. Some people would punish the child for crying or for showing their feelings or for being frustrated. And some people would try to, you know, connect and bond and see. You know, as a parent, I feel that I'm here to help my child to grow up, to guide her. That's my philosophy. I'm here to guide her. Mm-hmm. And she's not here to please me, because I felt that I have pleased my mother more than, you know, than was authentic. I've not been able to be authentic. And that's what I wish for my child to be. Yeah.
So your child is not for you to resolve your own wounding, to use. Okay. So if you see something that resembles something that you went through, you can recognize it in yourself and do it differently. However, you're not using your child as the guinea pig.
Yeah.
And a lot of parents do that.
Yeah. Or we try to achieve something through our children that we were not able to achieve in our own childhood. So children are often used for our own, you know, to fulfill the holes in ourselves or to correct something, you know, in our own energy fields that we were not able to do. Mm-hmm. And I really try to, you know, And I know it's very hard, you know, especially with these kind of powerful children that I like mine.
Right.
It's not easy to do that. I mean, I see that I start to give orders also. Do not do this, do that, stop this, do that. I mean, and as soon as I catch myself. And it's also connected to, you know, to tiredness or to not having any energy. But as soon as I catch myself, I really feel that I'm not coming from my heart. It's like birds.
I wanted to sing the Bad Boy song.
I thought this was like echo from the program, but it's something over there. No, but so I think it's really important for me as a parent to always to come back to my heart and really connect to myself first, see wherever I'm too strict or too tired, getting anxious maybe, or, you know, things like that, that stir our systems. And then trying to discharge my energy on her. That's what we do a lot. So how do I, you know, take a step back, relax, breathe, and then connect again and come back to my heart and then see her and how I'm treating her. And often it's not like I want to treat her. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. We get caught up at times with external events or issues.
Yeah.
And we miss our children. And that's tough. That's tough as a parent to come back from.
And we make those humongous. So mistakes. I really explain her that's my, you know, one of my bad aspects that I'm very impatient. So she knows that. You know, I say, I'm sorry, I'm impatient. Just try to move with me now because I'm very impatient. I don't want to punish you or anything, but I'm very impatient. Do you please want to, you know, cooperate with me now so I don't have to explode? And I know it's not your fault. You're not doing it. It's inside of me, but, you know, please cooperate.
Yeah. Oh, and see, when I hear you say that, that's actually the healing response that you needed as a child, that you were looking for, and you were able to step back.
Because my mother, she was like me, she was very sensitive. So many things would, you know, penetrate her field and would make her frustrated or impatient. And she would explode very quickly. Mm-hmm. And I'm not doing that anymore because I have more space, much more space to be with her. At the same time, she needs to know who I am and why I'm reacting in certain ways. Yeah. So she can also, you know, she starts to make choices when being around people, for example, who are very impatient, that she has a choice, that she can cooperate, for example, if she wants to, or she could, you know, leave them and let them solve their own issues and not being hurt by it personally, to not take things personally.
That's one of the lessons. I love that you said that. It was my daughter taught me a lesson. I don't remember what I was doing, what it was about. I said something. I wasn't really present. And so my daughter says to me, "Dad, haters are going to hate." And I said, "Yep, you're right.
Yeah,
haters are going to hate. You can't please everybody.
Yeah, and they are so smart. That's also very nice. You know, if you are willing to listen to them, you really get new insights. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for my own healing response, the insights that I received at some point was to never hit or spank or beat. That's not something. And I also experienced emotional and verbal abuse. So to never do any of those things, especially the physical. You know, we yell, I yelled, said things that, gosh, I didn't mean. But the physical abuse or the physical beatings, was so horrendous, so horrible. Mm-hmm. And I bear the scars on my body from those beatings. And, you know, it's inflicting that kind of pain or damage onto another human being. That turned into my passion for helping.
Yeah. People. And my house, my parents would also make a lot of jokes, but, you know, jokes about me or about my friends, or which are using words that were meant to be funny, but were not really funny. So my mother, when my child was, you know, younger, she would use those words also for her, like, you know, being sweet at the same time, but telling her that she was stupid, for example, you know, that she was being a little bit dumb or something. So I really told my mother to not do that to her, to be really respectful in her language. So, and she really hurt me. So she stopped doing that. So that's really nice. That's really also healing, you know, to, she's really respectful to my child in her wording. And now there's the next level in, you know, more in the energy. What are you communicating in energy? So that's the next step. And we are having, it's difficult, but we are having conversations about it. So I'm really telling my mother how I would like my daughter to be treated, and not as she treated me or, you know, my sisters. Yeah.
I love that. I love that you're able to have these conversations with your mom. That kind of opens up, you know, my resolution to my wounding with my parents. At some point before my mom passed away, she and I had a conversation, and she apologized to me. And wasn't expecting it, didn't see it coming. And
yeah, beautiful.
It was a beautiful healing.
Yeah, and that's also something, you know, as also we can do as parents for our children. Sometimes just say sorry. I'm sorry, I hurt your feelings, or, you know, and take a moment for it, like to really address it and connect with your child and say, I'm really sorry about that, because that's instantly healing.
And now my father and I have a good relationship as well.
Yes.
It's a weird thing. And I'm still, there's a part of me that's still kind of suspicious.
Yeah.
But he's old now, and I can run faster than that.
Yes. That's your insurance.
That there's absolutely, yes. But just to have those conversations, we don't talk about the pain. That's not something where we, you know, we're not there. However, we have deeper conversations, and I've gotten to know him, and he's gotten to know me better. So that's been a
really good I also had that one with my father a few weeks ago. Like it was about something else that was like when we were very young, like seven, I was seven, my sister five, that we had to go by train from my mother in Amsterdam to the countryside where he lived. And that I could really explain why that's too much for a small child to bear such a responsibility when you're seven and have to look out for your little sister going by train, like, for, you know, 1.5 hours to another city. Yeah. So, yeah, he became really conscious about it. Yeah. So there's not like an apology, but at least he listened to me and heard me and, you know, got a different perspective. And you can feel how that changes something in the relationship.
And like we mentioned before, it's also healing 7 generations back. I think it's more, but that's what they say. And it's also
Yeah.
healing 7 generations or more forward. So it's ancestral curse or wounding, just
Yeah.
from that those apologies or
Yeah.
even the
And
listening
also the
can
parent
do a
taking
lot of healing.
responsibility for whatever they did in the past. Okay, they've done it, but still they can take responsibility for it now in the present moment that they did. And it may be. May have been painful or hurtful, or, yeah.
So before we end, there's a book that I recommend for all of you who are listening and would like to know more about characterology or personality traits or patterns. It's called The 5 Personality Patterns, Your Guide to Understanding Yourself and Others and Developing Emotional Maturity. It's by Stephen Kessler. It's a really good book. The names that he uses in the book are different than the ones that we've been using. So, and the timing, the pain, the actual traumas are all listed and they're the same. How you can start to work with it and resolve it within yourself
Yeah.
or your children. Or you can reach out to Paramalaya here in the US
Yes, of course.
or anywhere actually, because you do
Yes.
Zoom sessions, yeah?
No problem. Yeah. It's
So again, what's
sensate570
that email address?
at gmail.com.
That's right. And we would love to get some feedback. So just hit the button. We'll get that information and we'll respond. Actually, Hermelin will respond because he likes to write.
No, you're taking your own responsibility.
No. Didn't what
No,
the
we're
heck
happy to
say.
hear from you. Yeah.
So
Yeah.
absolutely. Please,
Yeah.
please. And if you have anything that you'd love for us to discuss,
Yeah, you
please
can follow us on
give us your insight,
Instagram.
your thoughts.
Yes. Yeah, well,
I suck at
it's
IG, so you're
Hermelijn
gonna
van der
have to.
Meijden,
What's your
so
Instagram?
you'll find it. Just try. It's not my name,
I mean,
but
Wonder Woman.
you'll end up somewhere,
Yeah,
I bet. Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. Awesome. And there are other books that you can read or go to the Brennan website
Yeah.
if you want to know more about characterology.
Yeah.
Core Energetics
Yeah.
website also.
Yeah, and
Those
also
five.
good to know that your defense mechanisms or your characterology are not who you are. They are just your map towards the real you.
Absolutely. And they change. As we become more aware of what's going on, we can change. We do change. Like I said, I went from skinny to, and now I'm back
Yeah.
to, I guess I have
Okay.
a regular physique now, right? All right.
Yeah.
If you could only see what I'm doing.
Yes. See you
Always a
next
pleasure, my
time. See you
friend.
next week. Happy Monday. See you soon.